So this is the title of my podcast, Justice Unraveled. My name is Luis Armando Arias. I'm an assistant professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice and Security Studies. I graduated from UTEP in 1977 with a degree in political science. I'm retired from the FBI as a supervisory intelligence analyst. The way I use my moral dilemmas is it extracts from the student their logic, how they think, having been socialized through family, friends, school, and so what's their value system to help them decipher this moral dilemma. Generally speaking, what moral dilemmas do is that we are confronted every day on having to choose right from wrong. So this is the title of my podcast, Justice Unraveled.
There's more reasons to not use torture, but I do think it was a controversial scenario.
I think it depends on the government structure too.
I just don't think it's right. We have a right way of doing things. We have what's called the due process of law.
We would be breaking the law at the expense of somebody's life.
I was asking myself, should law always be followed, even when it leads to seemingly immoral results?
That would be someone's family, maybe someone's brother, someone's sister, mother, getting put to death.
Anybody would do anything to survive.
The moral dilemma before us is the case of the Spelunsian explorers. The story revolves around five members of a cave exploring expedition who become trapped in a cave after a landslide blocks their exit. With limited resources and no way to contact the outside world, they are unlikely to survive without drastic action. After several days, they communicate with a rescue team, which estimates that they will need an additional 10 days to reach them. Facing starvation, the trapped explorers agree among themselves that one of them should be sacrificed and eaten to allow the others to survive. They decide to determine who will be sacrificed through a dice game. Roger Widmore, one of the explorers, initially proposes a solution, but later tries to withdraw his consent before the game. The others, however, proceed, and Widmore loses and is killed and eaten. When the survivors are eventually rescued, they are charged with Whitmore's murder under the jurisdiction legal code, which prescribes the death penalty for intentional killing. The case is brought before a fictional court where five justices offer a range of interpretations on whether the defendants should be punished. Their opinions highlight different legal philosophies, such as strict interpretation of the law, natural law theory, and the balance between legal and moral considerations. Good afternoon, Andrea. How are you this afternoon?
Good afternoon. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. So thank you very much for joining me. Let's go ahead and just get started. I wondered if you could share with me and our audience, what is the central legal issue in the case of the Spelunsian explorers?
I would say it's whether they should be sentenced to death or not. I think that's the main legal aspect behind it, whether that was a fair case or not. Fair sentence.
You think that legal principles should be strictly applied in extreme situations such as life and death, survival situations like this case, or whether there should be some exceptions in those situations?
I feel like that it should be exceptions. It could be a prevention to greater harm or in emergency situations. I feel like there should be exceptions to these.
And you mentioned a couple of things like necessity. Can you share with me an example of where or what is an extreme situation aside from this case where one could say, well, that's an emergency situation. I think there should be some exception to the legal principles and strict interpretation of that.
I'd feel like in self-defense, I would feel like that would be an emergency situation.
Question that I have is, do you think that morality play a role in judicial decision making?
Yes, I think it should.
And can you expound on how does morality or how should morality play in a judicial decision?
For example, in this case, well, what happened in the cave was absolutely terrible, and there was a natural instinct to survive. And I feel like moral reasoning should be played into that because okay. It's your natural response, and whether it's life or death.
So having read, having understood, having analyzed this case, the case of the Spelunsian explorers, what is your decision? Should those four defendants, remember that there were originally five explorers, but one is deceased, should the rescued defendants be tried for murder?
I believe they shouldn't be tried for murder. When you're in this kind of position and situation, you're not thinking about laws and whether they're going to sentence you to death or not. You're thinking about survival.
Okay.
And I believe that there was a crucial ethical problem in this case because one of them withdrew from their consent of drawing the lots and picking him.
Mm-hmm.
I believe if they were to be punished, it should be for that. But I would think that a death sentence is a bit too extreme and severe.
So your decision is that they should not be found guilty,
yes,
for murder, mm-hmm, of Roger Whitmore, that that is maybe too severe of a punishment, do you think? That?
Yes, I think it's very severe.
What would be the alternative? What would you do if you were the judge?
If I were the judge, I would probably give them a sentence, a very lesser sentence for having taken the life of somebody that did not consent to having their life been taken away from them.
So you would outright not acquit them, I mean, still make them responsible for their actions, but maybe a punishment that would not be too severe?
Yes.
And so would we be talking about prison time? Should they all be punished the same, or the person who actually committed the alleged crime?
All the same.
All the same.
If they were all in it and everybody said yes to the action, I feel like they should equally be punished for it.
So the idea that better to sacrifice the one to save the four, because you have talked about how they are in this predicament, and it was about preservation of life, and that has to mean something. Do you think that there is room for argument of a utilitarian? Well, sacrifice the one so that the four may survive. Would that be a rightful outcome or decision if you were the judge?
I think most would agree on that more lives were saved than lost.
Mm-hmm.
I think many would look at that and say this was probably the better decision, because what if we had lost all five of them?
So with your moral compass as a judge, would you be swayed more to acting morally or legally?
In this case, morally. The law should be interpreted with a view to justice and survival, and that given the extreme situation, the explorers were in a state of nature. I would agree with Justice Foster.
And so let's transition to Judge Foster. So this case is sort of illustrative of this idea and the concepts of natural law and positive law, later decided by, or at least that was his rationale, Judge Foster in this case. Can you share with us your interpretation? So what is natural law as compared to positive law?
I would define natural law as a universal moral principles, a law based on human nature and reason.
Okay.
It's a more of a flexible and moral reasoning. In this case, the right to survive might override written law.
Mm-hmm.
In contrast, positive law is more of a human-made law. It's written down and enacted by authority.
I'll stay on the idea of natural law and Justice Foster. So I'm going to ask you a few questions with regards to his decision writing. And so he says, the proposition is that positive law is predicated on the possibility of men's coexistence in society. The men who are trapped in the cave, who are no longer part of, you know, the real world or outside of the cave. Can you kind of see his argument of natural law? Do you agree with his argument of natural law being applied in this case?
I do agree with him. I believe that, well, I imagine he believed that they should be acquitted as their actions were outside the law's reach.
So he writes, when a situation arises in which the coexistence of men becomes impossible, then a condition that underlies all our precedents and statutes has ceased to exist. Do you believe that? How do you feel about that?
It's a tricky question.
And if you can visualize it, he is saying, when that situation arises in which coexistence of men becomes impossible, then a condition that underlies all of our precedents and statutes has ceased to exist, that these laws do not apply to them anymore because they're down there.
It depends a lot on what you're thinking about doing down there, I would say. Like I said, when it comes to natural instinct and survival, I feel like anybody would do anything in order to survive.
When that condition disappears, you know, this coexistence of society, the force of our positive laws disappears with it. So does positive law cease to exist when these folks are no longer part of society, but rather they're down there? So they come up with their own natural law. Again, you're still consistent in your belief that Justice Foster comes up with a pretty good argument?
I would say so, yes.
Okay. What do you feel about territorial or jurisdiction, the fact that they are underground, they are no longer under the jurisdiction of society? So, for example, when a crime is committed in our city, within the city limits, the local police department has jurisdiction over those cases. The idea that laws pertain to a city, pertain to a county in terms of enforcement of laws and so on. So what he is saying there, territorial jurisdiction applies here. They're no longer part of the territory of society. They're down here. Would you think that the defendants have an argument for saying, we're no longer part of the jurisdiction of up there. We have our society here.
Like I said, I think the law should be a big factor here because, again, it's illegal and moral.
And so we'll get to your decision, and there are five judges who are in this analysis, this case. Which judge or judges do you kind of side with or say, yeah, I agree with this judge, and then if you can share your reasons why? Is it Justice Truepenny? Is it Justice Foster, Justice Keene, Justice Hanley, Justice Tantley? Of those five judges, which one are you most closely siding with in terms of their interpretation of this case?
I understand Justice Truepenny's side of it because from what I read, he does express sympathy and understanding towards the case, but ultimately upholds the law. I understand his point of view. I understand every point of view from all the justices, but for example, Justice Foster, like I said, who votes for not guilty, I can side a little bit more with him, as well as Justice Handy. Is it Handy or Hanley?
Handy, I think.
Handy, who also votes for not guilty because the justice believes that the court should consider public opinion, and he emphasizes a human-centered approach to justice. But for example, Justice Keene, who strictly follows positive law and argues that personal morality shouldn't influence legal decisions, I would not agree with that because I do believe that you should have a little moral aspect in these types of cases, in these types of extreme cases.
Okay. Speaking of Justice Keene, and we'll come back to the other justices, he has a strict interpretation of adhering to the written law. And like you mentioned, without consideration of moral or emotional considerations. He also is of the position that if we were to take sort of the moral or look at it from compassion or emotional and invite that into the interpretation of law, the integrity of the legal system would be lost. Do you think he is right if we were to allow for our emotion to come into our written interpretation of the law that might harm the integrity of the legal system?
If you were to apply it to every single case, yes, it would harm the integrity of these cases. But in these extreme, very extreme, severe cases, I think there should be an exception made.
Okay. Chief Justice Truepenny, just to come back to them, he finds them guilty. He's sort of a strict interpretationist of the law. He feels that the law must be applied as written and that there be no clemency. Is there room in your mind for to side with him or, yeah, that's a little too strict, a little too hard?
I wouldn't agree with him completely. I think Justice Keene was definitely the most strict one. The fact that Justice Truepenny follows positive law, but he recognizes the moral dilemma. I feel like that is a good point of view because he recognizes it and, again, expresses sympathy and understanding of what happened.
So between Justice Keene and Justice Truepenny, which one is more favorable to you? Or
I don't agree with Justice Keene because he's just looking at it from one point of view, arguing that the court's rule is to apply the law as written without any moral judgment, which in other cases, I would agree on, but in this specific case, I would not. Therefore, I would side more with Truepenny because of the fact that he understands and recognizes the moral dilemma of the case.
Let's get with Justice Foster. So he's the one who introduces this concept, at least in his interpretation of the case before him, of these four defendants being charged for murder, and argues that natural law should apply in this case. He also goes on to say that the law of nature supersedes or should supersede written law in extreme circumstances. What is your idea of that?
I do think natural law should be on top of positive law. In this specific case, yes.
So these men, who were amateur explorers, did the good thing of notifying their family that they were going to go out and explore and go into caves, when lo and behold, there's this landslide that traps them. If one were to argue the idea, as Justice Foster mentions, about natural law, so they are in this cave for how long? Do you recall for how long they are in this cave?
Yeah. 27 days.
Yeah, about 30 days in total, approximately.
Mm-hmm.
In this environment that they are in, and it's about self-preservation, should they have killed Whitmore?
I believe there could be alternatives, definitely. Okay. There's always an alternative to every situation.
Okay, so what could they have done? Because you're speaking of alternatives, and it's good that you do. So around the 20th day, I think that they are underground. They find this radio, this mechanical device to communicate with the people up there. They ask questions of them, and I just wondered if you can recall for our audience, what are some of the communiques between the people down in the cave talking to the people up here when they find this radio?
Roger was the one who was asking the questions. They were talking to a doctor outside, and he had asked if they were going to survive, if it was likely, and they said it was probably not that likely.
Okay.
And then he continued to ask if they were to eat one of the other members, if they could survive. This person said, yes, you could survive.
Okay.
Nobody said anything. Nobody wanted to take, on the outside, nobody wanted to say anything else. Nobody wanted to take responsibility.
The same Roger Whitmore communicates later and asks the question of, what if we drew lots? Would that be okay? And there was silence. Why do you think they didn't respond?
Maybe the sentence would fall on them as well for being a part of it.
So the group undertakes to do what at Roger Whitmore's thought?
He suggests to the other four that they should draw lots to see who would get picked out to be eaten.
And how did they draw lots? Do you recall what the scenario says?
I remember it was the dice, but I'm not sure exactly how
I think Roger Whitmore had a dice or dice with him and said, I have a dice here. Why don't we roll the dice? And whosoever number comes up, and we'll all take a number, that person will be sacrificed. So Roger Whitmore comes up with the idea. Does Roger Whitmore continue with the idea, or does he do something?
He withdraws from the decision-making. He backs out of it and says, I don't want to be a part of this anymore. The other survivors proceed to do the drawing of the lots.
And whose number comes up?
It's Roger Whitmore.
Roger Whitmore. Okay. Right before they roll the dice, though, they do ask him, do you have any objection? Because I think that's a breach of faith. Well, we're going to roll the dice anyway. Do you have any objection? For which Roger said nothing. And so in law, silence is acquiescence or silence is acceptance. The number that came up happened to be Roger Whitmore. Brings the issue of consent. Do you think that Roger Whitmore consented to be sacrificed by his silence then? That these people should not be found guilty of the crime then? On the idea of consent, or how do you feel about the word consent?
I feel like them making him be a part of it, that's a very big aspect of it, very, very big factor. Mm-hmm.
What could they have done?
Well, apart from the other drawing method, that they could have used a different method that only included the willing participants. And respected the person's right to opt out. They could have waited longer. I feel like it's a very risky move to make since they don't know how much time they have.
Necessity. Let's talk a little bit about that. Do you think in this case, is necessity a defense to these defendants? In other words, Your Honor, we're being tried and we're being charged with murder, and part of our defense that we should be acquitted from these charges is we acted out of necessity.
I believe it is, since, again, they didn't know how long they were going to be stuck there for. They didn't know if they were going to survive. Also, the acts that were made, they weren't acts of malice, were desperate. Desperate measures were taken in these extreme circumstances, and they felt the necessity to do what they had to do.
So maybe necessity might equate to the idea of desperate times equals desperate measures. Let me suggest this hypothetical. So between the word larceny, which is theft, and murder, of those two crimes, which one is more serious or grave?
Murder.
Okay. cases have been had before courts, and there's a famous book written, Les Miserables, by Victor Hugo. And the main character in there, Jean Valjean, takes bread that doesn't belong to him, commits larceny to feed his siblings who are starving. He gets caught. He argues that he did it out of necessity, and the judge ruled that that is not a defense to a crime of theft, so he gets sent to prison. You shared with me the word murder is a more serious crime than larceny. So if we were to put murder here and use the word necessity as a defense to murder, if necessity is not a defense to larceny, which is a lesser crime, then how can necessity be a defense to murder?
All that comes to mind is self-defense at the moment.
Let me offer this scenario. A house is on fire, a house that doesn't belong to you. You hear screams coming from the house, including screams from children, where it would be criminal for you to go into someone's house without permission. That would be burglary, a crime. And so you enter the house to rescue these folks. You get charged for burglary, going into somebody's house without permission. Could necessity be a defense to you?
Definitely.
And why?
It was a genuine emergency situation in which, in this case, I could save lives. I believe in these emergency situations.
So you would equate that burning house the same as being the equivalent of the Spelunsian explorer cave?
Yes.
I'll come back to the first scenario that I shared with you, larceny and murder. There was a famous case, real case, Regina versus Dudley Stevens. These were people that were on a boat. The boat capsized, and they get into a small little boat and spend 19, 20 years in the ocean out there with very little to eat. There are four persons on this boat. One of them is a cabin boy whose trip was for the very first time going out onto the ocean, his first adventure. He is told not to drink ocean water, and he does so, and he becomes sick. There's no semblance of any kind of rescue, and so they're desperate too. They talk amongst themselves and decide, if we were to sacrifice him, eat his flesh while we don't have food, we could at least survive. They put a pen to his neck, and he dies, and they eat off him. They are eventually rescued, but they are also charged with murder. They also claimed necessity. In that case, is that sort of similar to this Spelunsian case, do you think? Sacrifice the one so that the three can survive.
Similar in some ways, but I feel like you would have more resources. In the case of the boat, you're in the ocean, you have what is fish. Those are definitely more resources.
Okay. As compared to Spelunsian.
I didn't read any mention of any resources, any water, any food. And it's a landslide that occurred. No sunlight, no water, no food, and no way to get it.
I guess the last point I want to make, if there is any kind of room for this, is the idea of self-defense. Do you think that the defendants could argue that they acted in self-defense? Could they raise the idea of self-defense, do you think?
I believe they can raise the self-defense towards them, since it was defense in order to survive, as well as necessity.
Were their lives threatened by Roger Whitmore? So if we were to define self-defense as people who kill, in self-defense, kill someone who poses a threat to them, did Roger Whitmore pose a threat to the others?
I don't believe he did.
Would you still be of the belief then that they could raise the argument of self-defense?
Well, now that you put it like that, I'd probably use more the word necessity than self-defense. Okay.
If Roger Whitmore, unbeknownst to the other three, had a gun and never told them about it, and they're angry at him, let's just say hypothetically, and so they're coming after him, would Roger Whitmore argue self-defense in that case?
If Roger was being threatened?
Yeah. Remember that, again, self-defense is killing someone who poses a threat to them.
I believe he definitely could raise the self-defense in favor of him.
People who kill out of necessity do so because they have to in order to avoid dire consequences. Could they raise necessity?
Yes, they could, because it was a life or death situation.
So necessity still for you. Okay.
Definitely is a one of the top factors in this case.
Any reaction or reflection on this case? Something that you were you learned that you otherwise would not have learned about this case?
I was asking myself the questions of, should law always be followed, even when it leads to seemingly immoral results? When should moral considerations override legal ones? And who decides when exceptions should be made?
Yeah.
All of these key questions were very, some of them were hard to kind of resolve, but I think at the end of my decision, I think I'm very firm on what I think and yeah. my choice on what I would do if I was.
So you would find them guilty or not guilty?
I would find them not guilty.
So you would exonerate them of all charges?
The death sentence is definitely a no for me.
Okay.
Again, the ethical problem that I could not ignore, the Wetmore's autonomy and his decision of wanting to be excluded from the lots.
Okay.
My position is that while the death penalty is far too severe and inappropriate, given the circumstances, some form of a lesser punishment might be warranted.
Well, thank you very, very much for,
thank you for
sitting with
me
and discussing this case that is otherwise not an easy case and has a lot of legal terminology, nuances, implications, mm-hmm. as well as the moral side of things, too. What is the moral, ethical thing to do as a judge? There was one judge that did back out because, again, he just could not decide this case based on emotion. And even though he was intellectually capable of, this case just brought to him too much emotion that he was just unable. He could not separate the emotional from the intellectual reactions.
Mm-hmm.
So he abstained. And so, but thank you very much for sharing this
thank
with me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Not right.